We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and D. Today you have a post, today or tomorrow, you got a post going up on Silver Screen and Roll. Give us the premise of that, because that's going to be the premise of this pod.
So basically, we're in the dog days of summer. Mm-hmm. But as we've discussed a bunch of times, like, the Lakers are actively working to try to improve their team. Don't take my word for it. Take Rob Pelinka's word for it. Take Jeannie Buss's word for it. The "we're not done" has been plastered out there as sort of a mantra of where the team is at this offseason. And since nothing has changed, since those comments have come out, you have to assume that they're still not done. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is, under the idea of, like, could Russell Westbrook return to the Lakers next season? And the more and more I think about it, the more and more I think that no, he could not. And my sense is that the Lakers need to actually trade Russell Westbrook. And that it's not a matter of if, it's not a matter of should they, it's a matter of when to me. Because I'm of the stance now, after thinking about this for a while, that there's just too many factors at play here for him to amicably return and for things to move forward as if none of the past has happened. And that we can discuss this within the context of a fresh start with a new head coach and a whole new roster. And I get all of those points, but I keep coming back to the idea that no, none of that is going to matter more than all that has happened to this point. And so what I wrote about at Silver Screen and Roll is basically that. It's this idea of, yep, the Lakers are going to need to trade Russell Westbrook. And maybe that's like, oh, of course, dummy. But the setup of this summer has been a little bit twofold, where the team has been actively trying to trade him, but Darvin Ham has been actively out there doing a lot of media. He's done more media than any Lakers head coach that I can remember.
Mm-hmm. And he's been very enthusiastic and very out there about his support of Russell Westbrook. He hasn't danced around questions. He hasn't been subtle. He said, "I'm looking forward to coaching him." So it's in context with everything that you've said and how we've gotten to this point. That's a super interesting dynamic, because that's not what I would expect a coach who's not expecting to coach him to talk like.
No, and this goes back, Pete, to the remember when the rumors before even Darvin Ham was hired, and they were talking about the hiring process. And
all right,
if you remember, one of the like breaking news sort of reports things was, hey, you know, the Lakers are interviewing head coaches, and one of the main things they're asking is, like, how would you plan to utilize Russell Westbrook? And everyone sort of rolled their eyes at that and like, oh, why are you even asking them this? Or why is that even important? No one expects Russell Westbrook to be here next season, yada, yada, yada. But at his introductory press conference, he set the stage for all of this, right? He was just like, y'all got it messed up. He was almost defiant in his approach to the view of Russell Westbrook and then reshaping the path for a return and like what he envisions for him. And so where I'm at is like, that's great. And that's sort of how I expect the new head coach to talk about every player that is under contract for their team. Darvin Ham has talked about Anthony Davis explicitly. He has talked about LeBron James explicitly. He's even mentioned Austin Reeves and Stanley Johnson and other players who were on the roster as sort of what he envisions their role to be. And so I would, in its own way, I would expect no different for Russell Westbrook, who is also under contract for next season, especially after he picked up his player option. But from my position, Pete, they've also been actively trying to trade Russell Westbrook. Those reports are out there. And like, if it was one or two random reports, I would feel like, oh, okay. But
well, we also had the report. He also split from his agent, of which we got the very rare insight of the agent's perspective saying that, hey, I've been arguing that your best shot is to stay in LA and try to make it work, with the implication that that was part of the reason why they split. Now, that's an implication, not necessarily true, but that's kind of giving information from Russ's perspective on this too.
Well, also too, look, with the agent's comments, Thad Boucher, or Fouché, I'm messing up his name here.
Yeah.
He basically confirmed that the Lakers have been actively trying to trade Russ because he specifically said that the market has told us X, which is if Russ is going to be traded, assets are going to need to be attached to him. And then on top of that, the expectation is, or if not the expectation, that there's a likelihood that he would then be bought outright.
Yeah, nobody'd be trading for him as the player. It's just to facilitate a move, get a pick.
But in saying all of that, the agent has basically confirmed what the reports are. That the Lakers are, like, how would he talk about what the market is telling them if there are no discussions out there? So implicitly, we then have confirmation of the reports that the Lakers are trying to trade him because it's right from Russell Westbrook's agent's mouth. And Russ's agent would be in the loop about the things that are going on with his client. That's just the setup. My setup is that, okay, you've been trying to trade him. And that's been happening at the executive level. At the head coach's level, the head coach is basically operating under the guise, like, in a sense, like, what he has to do, which is the expectation that Russell Westbrook is going to return. Until he's not on the roster, he's on the roster. And you have to plan as such.
Coaches are short-term, immediate. I got to coach the guys that are on my team. And sometimes the guys on my team are going to change. But they have to be in that mindset. It's one of the reasons why combining the GM and the coach's role, that's something that had been tried a lot in the past. You see that less and less because the priorities and kind of the buy-in that you need, even if you're the coach, right, and you're looking to trade a guy, that it's hard to wear both hats. And so however this resolves, I just want to say Darvin Ham has been wonderful in this whole process. I think he's been much needed, and we're going to have a whole pod kind of on, I think, on his positivity and his mindset and outlook on that. But back to Russ.
Yeah, no, well, just one last point on Ham as well. Don't get me wrong in this. I don't think he's being insincere.
Right.
I don't think he's like trying to blow smoke. Like, do you remember?
He's just in a different role. Yeah.
Well, also, too, do you remember when all the reporting was going on around the potential trade of James Harden from the Nets to the 76ers? And Steve Nash, he went on the record with the media saying there are no discussions being had. Like, James Harden is not being traded. He said that at least once, but I think two or three times on the record. And literally a few days later, James Harden got traded. Now, do you think Steve Nash wasn't in the loop about James Harden being traded? And so, like, and this is nothing against Steve Nash. Like, look, like, sometimes you go in front of the cameras and you lie. You lie because it's what's in the best interest of your organization to lie. I don't think Darvin Ham is sitting here concocting a role for Russell Westbrook. And like, for what? There's no reason for that. And so I'm taking Darvin Ham at his word. So I don't want to make it seem like Coach Ham is being duplicitous in any way, right? Or he's trying to blow smoke at us around what he envisions as a role for Russell Westbrook. I just think, though, that in the end, none of what he's saying is going to matter, or it shouldn't matter, because I think the Lakers are going to have to trade him. And that if they don't trade him, that they are doing Darvin Ham a bit of a disservice here, because in the big picture, I do not think this is going to work out in the way that if he returns, the way that the Lakers would want. So let's go to break here, Pete, because I think that there is some gray area here about what's best for the team in the big picture and how you actually accomplish this. And actually, if there is a we have to do it mode. So I want to hear your thoughts about that when we come back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So for me, there's an order of preferred outcomes. The preferred outcome is Russ gets traded. We get back a guy or guys that we're happy with. That Russ ends up in a spot where he's happy. Everyone's happy, right? It's a trade. Everyone finds a partner for the right compensation and a deal gets done for the players that everyone wants. But I would rather go into the season with Russ than make a bad trade with Russ. One of our philosophies, and this has been something that's been reported in these discussions, has been like you trade picks, future picks, for the idea of getting into contention, right? And if the offer on the table, this is my question for you, D, is there a time factor into this of if there's an offer on the table that does not, like, you got to give up both future firsts, right? And what you get back does not. You don't look at that and be like, yeah, that's a squad that could. That's all you ask for, right, is to be in that conversation. I would rather start the season with Russ on the team and wait. And I know that puts us in this not great place. And you were talking about like fresh starts and that idea kind of in the context of like, oh, well, you know, maybe things would be better with sure. Russ and Darvin Ham. And I actually think they would be, right? I do think that this roster and this coach with this framework is much more conducive to a lot of the things I was talking about last season, right? That said, Darvin Ham also deserves a fresh start. In terms of the importance to the next several years in Lakers history, Darvin Ham's going to be more important to us than Russell Westbrook is going to be. And so there is some degree of like, hey, let's put our new coach in a position to succeed. I just think that this move in particular is so important, what happens with it, that we really have to nail it. And so I would rather wait. And now there's danger in this, and I totally get that. But I would rather wait and be like, look, let's all be professionals. Let's try to make this work as best we can. Let's make progress on this front than put ourselves in a position that we can't get out of, and that we've given up future assets, meaning that we can't build a legit championship team off of this. Like, this is one I really think we need to get right.
I agree that the Lakers really do need to get it right. That said, a podcast ago, Mike was making an analogy about like marriage and that idea of like happiness. And we were talking about like player happiness, right? Well, the situation of bringing Russ back to training camp is like saying, yeah, well, we're separated, but we're still going to live together for a while. Like, you know, like, I know you got to move out and I know that you have to find a place, but, but like, yeah, like you can sleep on the couch for a while, or there's the spare bedroom that's back there, right? It was an office.
It's totally not ideal. I totally get it.
It was an office, but we'll put a futon back there for you and you can sort of stay until you find something. And then, you know, a few weeks go by and then suddenly there's a knock on the door and it's just like, oh, well, who's this? Oh, well, this is my friend. And, you know, she's just coming to get me and we're going to go out, right? And it's just like, oh, really?
This is very elaborate, D. This is
all I'm talking about is there's a level of you're inviting the discomfort. And
the poisoned well, too, is like, yeah.
So let's go back a little bit. Like Russ, the only thing Russ didn't do at his exit interview was implicate Jeannie Buss and Kurt Rambis and Linda Rambis and to a certain extent, Rob Pelinka. He basically was just like, yep, never felt like myself here. Yep, head coach. I did some nice stuff for him and he kept basically like making me feel like I had to prove something to him. Oh yeah, yeah, I know LeBron and AD said that they wanted me to be me, but we all know, come on, we saw it.
It was all bad. It was all bad.
That wasn't true, right? Yeah. And he basically disavowed almost everyone within the organization that mattered within the locker room structure, right? And yes, it's a new locker room, but you know who remains is LeBron and AD. And there were reports earlier this offseason about a conversation, a phone conversation that was had between LeBron and AD and Russ, and this will make it work. Like, in theory, they would have had ample opportunity to have the same conversations. They had those same conversations last offseason. They would have had those same conversations throughout the regular season, right? And my perspective is it's hard for me to envision bringing him back into the fold to start the year and not have that be the predominant story. And
of course it will be.
And not have that be every question be, oh, well, yeah, what about this? And what about that? And what about this? And what about that? And having to answer questions about that. And we already saw the spotlight last season in terms of media and Russ's sort of combative nature with the media at times. Sure. And I question when you talk about setting people up for success. I don't think you're setting Russell Westbrook up for success in that way, based off of his history. I don't think you're setting LeBron and AD up for success. And you're definitely not setting Darvin Ham up for success. And so I understand what you're saying, Pete, about like, you know, you got to get this right. You can't trade him away with multiple future first round picks and get back players who only marginally help the bottom line in terms of wins and losses. The goal is to be a championship team. And if you're not going to do that with Russell Westbrook, but you're definitely also not going to do it with whoever you trade him for, then what is the point?
That's right. Why give up the future stuff?
And I don't necessarily have a great answer for that besides the fact that, well, you can't bring him back under these circumstances, right? And so what are you actually doing here? Like, I think you have to still make the effort to build towards the best version of what you can be with LeBron and AD completely bought in. And I question how that will all play out if you come to camp with him.
Where do you stand on sending him home, the John Wall type of situation, with the idea that, say, we go through this offseason and every offer that's available is like, now that's too much. That where it fits that description you were just talking about, where we make a trade, but it doesn't, we don't leave ourselves in a position where we feel like we're a championship contender, and we don't have future things to trade to be able to acquire players that can get us there. So we decide, bring Russ back, knowing all of the funkiness that exists that you articulated. But you give it a shot and it doesn't work out, right? This is just a hypothetical. I'm in a spot where, I think that this would be, I really don't want this, right? I think that this is not a good thing for us, but I would rather him be on the roster but not around than trade him for that type of deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that the true deadline for this is the trade deadline.
Sure.
Now, you lose something every bit. Like, the idea that you're going to have this brand new team at the trade deadline that doesn't have any cohesion, and all of a sudden you're a contender. Part of this is building just beyond this year as well. But I'm curious where you land on that, D, because to me that's preferable to a bad trade where you give up too much and you don't have enough to get there.
So this is where LeBron's looming free agency starts to creep in as a variable to me, right? So LeBron is extension eligible, and he's extension eligible all the way up until like the end of next offseason, right? So once the league year ends on July 1st of 2023, then it's a new league year. But every day up until then, LeBron James is extension eligible, right? If he does not sign an extension, he becomes an unrestricted free agent and he can go wherever he wants. The hard thing, and this is where, look, I don't have any inside information, and this is basically just me projecting. It's just me projecting my own thing that I carry, and this is me talking as if I'm putting myself in someone else's shoes, but it's really me in Sure. someone else's shoes, right? It's not me trying to cosplay. I wonder if you go the route of saying, well, yep, we couldn't get anything done, and so there's $47 million worth of salary cap space, and we're just sending that guy home. Go do the thing that you do without those resources available to us. We know that that's not ideal, but hey, we're thinking about the future. We're not thinking about this year, LeBron James.
So is that the message that's sent, is that we're thinking about the future?
If the idea is, well, we couldn't make a deal. We didn't want to include.
Because it's not good enough for the present, though. That's what the issue is. If you don't make that deal, it's because it's not good enough for now either, you know?
Yes and no. Been a little while since you heard one of those. But yes, yes and no. Because any player that you get back. In fact, let's go to break here because this requires even a bigger explanation. So again, this is yes and no here for me, Pete. It's because there's this idea of addition by subtraction, but there's also the idea of addition by addition. To lose a player for nothing, we saw plenty of that last season. The Lakers lost LeBron James for nothing. They lost Anthony Davis for nothing. Mm-hmm. And they did not have the depth in order to replace that. We've seen the roster, what it is, as of today. Well, the day that we're talking, Russell Westbrook currently takes up a roster spot and he takes up roughly 35% of the salary cap, right? My position is they need something, they need some contributions from either that roster spot or that money, or basically both, in order to be a good basketball team next
season.
Totally
agree.
Right. Yes. And so my position is when I'm thinking about LeBron James within this context is it is about the future. Because if you're not willing to attach the future draft picks in order to make the trade, that's going to give me some level of contributions from the player that would have been in that slot. Then you're basically telling me that you value that future more than you value the thing that you can get now, regardless of where you think that puts us. Because remember, Pete, you talked about the deadline being February. Yes, That is the deadline for making your team the team that's going to finish the season. That's not just the deadline to trade Russell Westbrook. That's the deadline in order to improve your team at all. So if you trade Russell,
that's the only thing that's after that. Yeah.
So if you trade Russell Westbrook now, and let's say you get back a couple of pieces and you give up future first round picks or whatever, you could still potentially try to make future deals with the things that you get back from Russell Westbrook before the February deadline in order to improve your team again, which is what the Cleveland. So Cleveland did exactly that when they traded Kyrie Irving. They traded him for all that stuff they got from the Celtics. And then at that next trade deadline, they were just like, yep, this isn't working. We're going to trade these guys again. Right. And then we're going to improve our team again. And then that reinvigorated LeBron. And then they made another run to the finals. And then they lost in the finals. But you get the gist of things, that there can be incremental improvement. And taking one small step forward could then push you forward again in order to make another move down the line, rather than standing pat and just holding it all in reserve and being like, ah, we tried. Because my thing about the we tried angle is, where does that leave you with LeBron? And potentially too, man, like, where does that leave you with Anthony Davis even? Like, we're looking at a guy like Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant has 4 years left on his contract. And guess what? He looked around and he was just like, nah, I'm not feeling y'all anymore. Get me out of here. And the Lakers could be very, like, could you envision a scenario where things go poorly this season? LeBron's just like, yep, maybe this isn't for me anymore. And then AD looking around and being like, well, what happened to the team that I thought I was going to win championships with? Well, that team's gone. Oh, well, you've got two more years on your contract after this, AD. And he's just like, yeah, well, maybe it'd be better for me to spend those 2 years somewhere else. And then suddenly you're the Lakers and you're back in the wilderness again, right? Now, maybe you've recouped assets and done all of this. This is me forecasting many, many moves down the line. But we remember what it was like when the Lakers were in the lottery every single season. And that was fun in its own right, around like, oh, drafting young players and trying to build them up. And I still enjoy the success that Brandon Ingram enjoys, or Lonzo Ball enjoys, or D'Angelo Russell or Julius Randle, right? I love seeing Larry Nance and Jordan Clarkson. Those were all former Lakers. I love watching them around the league. You know what I loved more? I loved watching LeBron and Anthony Davis win a championship. That's what I love. And so, sorry, I've been rambling here for a minute, but it's like that. I keep coming back to the idea of like, nah, y'all got to get something done, because it's tricky.
I think more than that, you got to be on the same page with LeBron and AD.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why, like, I don't think you start the season with like, ah, Russ, just stay home. We'll try to find a trade for you over the course of the season. That's why I do think that trying to make it work first is, and again, work is a relative term, right? But trying to make the best of the situation, I think, is the superior option, right? My question for you, to put it bluntly, is, do you trade that second first? And now, mind you, I really want to emphasize, I'm coming from the point of view, I do not care about the 27 first rounder or the 29 first rounder beyond its ability to get us good players in the LeBron James era. So trade those picks. My concern is that what happens at the end of that? So my question for you is, you know the rumors that are out there. Do you trade that second first for a couple of guys that you don't know can be on the floor in high-level playoff games?
This is where, and I say this a lot, and it sounds like a cop-out, but this is where I'm so very happy I am not a general manager or a vice president of basketball operations, where these decisions lie solely on me. I will say, though, that there are constructions of deals where, yes, I would. And constructions of deals where I wouldn't actually even care if I got, quote unquote, a third star back for including that second first round pick. I think that if you need to recoup the depth and add good basketball players who can help you in high leverage situations, that is the goal. Like, because this is where my belief in LeBron James and Anthony Davis is the strongest. It's not that they need all of this stuff. It's that what they need are very particular types of pieces that can help them A, get through a regular season, and then B, support them in the right ways when the postseason comes in order for them to be at their best. Because them at their best is what makes the Lakers a championship contender, not a third star, and not necessarily all of the depth, right? The depth is super helpful, and those guys are going to need to make plays, and the value of role players, like, we value role players, Pete, you and me. We value those guys, right? And so I understand that those guys are going to be important, but my position is like, yeah, I'd give up the picks. I just would. Like, the Lakers just bought a pick that was number 35. Like, I feel like down the road, and this is another thing too. The Lakers can't trade future picks because they're encumbered, but they're not encumbered because they don't actually have future picks. The Lakers are actually only giving up one more pick in the next seven drafts. It's either the 2024 pick or the 2025 pick. The Pelicans can choose. So if they don't take the 2024 pick, it's because they deferred it to the following season, and then the Lakers get that pick. So the Lakers get their pick in 2023 for sure. They'll either get 24 or 25, and then right now they get 26, 27, 28, and 29. If they trade 27 and 29, and then they give up 24, for example, they'll have three of their next six first-round picks. And does that sound like a lot? It doesn't sound like a lot, but they'll still have second-round picks. They could buy potentially future second-round picks. There's no saying that they won't be able to trade any of the pieces that they currently get, or can't make future moves with guys that are already on their roster. It's not like this is all set in stone, right? And so I'm looking at the big picture as there's still lots of things that can happen, but the first thing that needs to happen is this. If this doesn't happen, then, like I said, I think they're setting themselves up for a whole lot of uncomfortableness that is not needed going into next season. And then potentially the dominoes start to go in a direction where I start to feel like, well, what are you really doing if you're the Lakers and you say, we love our stars, we appreciate our stars, we're in tandem with our stars, only to be like, well,
right,
we tried, but we couldn't make it happen. Sorry, yeah. Right? Sorry, star players. Like, you get to play with this sort of stripped down version of the roster while we sent $47 million home.
Mm-hmm. That's bad. That's a bad outcome for us. No way, no two ways about that. The question, though, is that, like, so from a theoretical standpoint, like, I'm totally for sending out those picks, though. But we're at the point of the offseason where it's specific trades for specific players.
Yep.
That, to me, like, there's one version where it's like, yes, I absolutely send out both firsts, right? Other versions, it's like, I think there are other options. That's the thing, too, is that I think that there are more options for Russ than – and we've gotten some reporting around this, right? I can't get too deep into it, right? But the idea that it's either this or nothing at all, I don't think is necessarily accurate either. So I do – and that's part of the reason why I do think it'll ultimately end with a trade, is I think that there are places –
yeah,
there's more than one option on the table. Yes. And I think that multiple parties are motivated enough to make it happen. But that's also, to me, even more of an argument for don't give up everything unless you're getting back something that you really believe in.
No. And look, this is where I am supportive of the idea that the Lakers need to make the best deal possible.
Of course. Yeah.
And there is a threshold for that where I'll be yes on one side of this. I'll be fine. Or from fine to ecstatic, right? And then there's a version of this where I'll be like, man, I don't really like that deal, right? I don't really like it. But if I end up on that side, the I don't really like this deal side, I will still say adamantly, well,
needed to be done?
It needed to be done in order to get the team routed back on a path where they then still have these other things available to them that before the situation as is, I don't think that's a tenable situation. I don't.
Do you think training camp is a deadline for this?
I do. or right around there, right? Like, look, man.
Because that's when the funk, that's when the like fresh start stuff and the all of that, that's when the rubber really hits the road there.
If Russ is on the team at media day, right, guess what's going to dominate the conversation? Russell Westbrook on the roster and LeBron James's extension.
How much does that matter? How much does the conversation and the noise matter?
In some markets, very little. I think in other markets, it matters more and more because the noise is just going to be a steady stream of noise. And this is where I think you're doing your head coach a disservice. Remember when Kyrie, like, wasn't vaccinated? And basically every question at every media appearance that, and look, there's media every day in the NBA. Every day you either have a practice, a shoot around, or a game. And every day, someone from the team, players and or the head coach, and this is especially true of the Lakers, where the Lakers have star players. Anthony Davis and LeBron do media every single day. They then have to get in front of the camera. They have to field questions. And they have to answer to whatever the media is saying. And do I trust that they can deflect? Or do I trust that they can dodge questions effectively? Yes, I do. But the part of me that feels like, is it actually fair to them to have to stand up and answer to all of this? And I don't. I just don't.
It's funny. This reminds me a little of the 2008 season where Kobe came into it with the trade demand. Obviously, we knew more of what our team was going to be. This is fundamentally a trade that would be different, that would change the roster. But going into the season with a certain degree of awkwardness certainly reminds me of that. And we shall see if anything gets done. But I do think that your topic today in Silver Screen and Roll is on the forefront of the decisions that the front office has to make with Russ over this summer. So should be very interesting. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Talk some more Lakers. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance,
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.